You're listening to All Over the Place, a podcast from International Transport Workers Federation, the podcast where we look at anything that affects transport workers. I'm Neha Prakash from International Transport Workers Federation Women's Department, with responsibility for the development and implementation of the Women's Advocate Program, providing support to survivors of violence. This is a special show looking at women transport workers, rise of domestic violence in COVID-19. In this show, I'm joined by Barb McQuarrie, the Community Director from the Center for Research and Education on Violence Against Women and Children at Western University. She is also convener of the International Domestic Violence at Work Network. A huge welcome. It's really exciting to have you today. In these unprecedented, challenging times where the world is fighting with the common enemy, the pandemic, domestic violence survivors are battling two wars, one with the virus and one to survive domestic abuse. Today, the global message is to stay at home, to stay safe and fight the pandemic. But what do we do when homes are not safe? A few days back, I was talking to a woman advocate who shared that a colleague who just recently got married is facing repeated sexual abuse in lockdown situation. In her words, since me and my partner are together 24/7 because of lockdown, I'm forced into unwanted sex almost 10 times a day. It's really disturbing, but it's also important to note that domestic violence is not limited to sexual or physical abuse. It includes verbal, emotional, economic abuse too. And the forms of violence that are being reported globally in lockdown situation are ranging from verbal abuse to marital rape. We are seeing increased cases of domestic violence all around the world and increased calls to helpline numbers. Google has reported a 75% increase in online searches for help with domestic violence. Bab, why do you think we are witnessing a sudden increase in domestic violence globally with this pandemic?
Neha, the way I would explain it is that abusers are weaponizing public health measures. So we know that isolation is already, it's an established tactic for domestic violence abusers, even outside of a pandemic context. And that includes different forms of isolation. And isolation is a control tactic. So it's social isolation from family, from friends, but it's also, it can be physical or geographical isolation, as well as victim surveillance, regulation of daily activities like sleeping and showering. So those were already tactics being used, but now we have laws that we need to protect us from the virus. And those laws are actually reinforcing women being cut off from their social supports. So home isolation, however vital it is to fight against the pandemic, is giving more power to abusers. So these social distancing measures are increasing women and their children's day-to-day exposure to abusive men. We know when family members are in close proximity, under conditions of duress for extended periods of time, rates of violence against women, as well as violence against children, increase.
Right. And like you were sharing some of the added risk factors that contribute to these situations, can you also talk about those added risk factors in pandemic situation?
Yes. So because of the lockdown conditions, women are unable to even temporarily escape abusive partners. And I think we'll come back to this, but in this sense, the absence of workplace support is really significant. And then we have virus-specific risks. So you have abusers threatening to expose women to the virus, or you have violence or threats to women because the abuser believes that their partner could infect them. And then you have perpetrators using misinformation or scare tactics about the pandemic, about the virus, to control women or to blame them. And then you have the risk factors of abusers who are now themselves facing anxiety, uncertainty, unemployment. And so we know that economic insecurity and poverty-related stress are triggers for conflict and domestic violence. And we know that in the midst of all these risks, because women themselves may be afraid of contracting the virus, it's harder for them to access services.
Right. And these factors, as we can already sense, will have a long-term impact. Even when the lockdown is over or the virus is gone, some of these situations like unemployment, economic loss, or the weak economy will have the added anxiety and will impact in long-term. And hopefully we'll be talking more about these long-term impacts and long-term responses in coming episodes.
It's going to be really, really important to keep talking about this. We know from past natural disasters and crises that while domestic violence rates do increase during the crisis, it's afterwards that we really see the increases as well. We have to remember that as much as some women are able to report what's happening to them, many more are not. Many more are under constant surveillance. They don't even have a chance to report what's happening to them. So once we have a little bit more freedom, less restricted movements, we know that we are going to see further increases.
Right. And some of the data that is coming from across the globe really highlights that it is a global problem, which breaks the common notion that domestic violence is more prevalent in poor, illiterate, developing countries. That means the risk factors, as you mentioned, are not specific to any race, ethnicity, or social class. These essentially link to the factors that are more global, and the response then has to be more global in that sense.
I completely agree. And just to go back to your question about risk, so I think the common underlying factor that we have here is that perpetrators, no matter where they live in the world, are feeling a loss of control due to the quarantines, due to the social distancing, social isolation measures, the economic uncertainty that's coming with all of that. And so their controlling behaviors and their acts of violence are actually coping measures for them to deal with that sense of they've lost control. And that is happening around the world.
So it's clear from what you're saying, Barb, that the workplace is a lifeline for many survivors of domestic violence. Sheila, you have been leading a similar study in India, along with other transport unions, on domestic violence and understanding its connection with the workplace. Can you share your experience and some of the key narratives from women facing domestic violence?
Namaste, Neha ji. Yes, we started the awareness on domestic violence in 2019 when we all were working together to make the ILO Convention on Violence and Harassment a reality for all workers. In this 1 year, I, along with my women advocates, have traveled to all divisions of the Maharashtra state and spoken to a lot of transport workers about domestic violence, the attitude of our government, our society towards the issue of domestic violence. Our purpose was to raise awareness that we need this convention in India, as we are done with being shamed and silent on the issue of domestic violence. During the process of data collection and meeting thousands of women, I realized that there is a very large number of women facing domestic violence, and one of the biggest challenges for them was reporting and making complaints of these cases. In our society, domestic violence is normalized, saying that kitchen mein do bartan honge to khatpat awaaz to hogi hi, meaning that if there are two utensils in the kitchen, they will make noise, so it's normal. So in a society like this, the main hurdle for reporting cases is social stigma and societal pressure. You know, in Indian society, if a woman is single or divorced, the attitude of the society towards her is very different, and they are not respected in the society. This is why women silently tolerate domestic violence and are not ready to report cases at the police station and do not demand divorce from their husbands, which is mainly because of all this social pressure. These women also think about their children. They think that if they make a complaint or ask for divorce, what will be the future of their children? That's why most women workers do not come ahead to report domestic violence cases. Neha, I would like to share one case regarding one of the women conductors who has been brutally beaten by her husband. He insults her, abuses her, and attacks her. And when I asked her the reason for tolerating this, she told me that since her two sisters have already left their husbands due to domestic violence and are staying at their maternal home, she cannot further add to the burden of the family. In these circumstances, it's really hard for women workers to live with peace. And another thing I have to tell, it is a bitter truth that women workers often express. They say that the workplace is better, supportive environment for them than their own homes. In this survey, we met thousands of women workers. Some repeated responses we have received is that the women facing violence at home feel safer in their work environment. The women facing domestic violence are totally frustrated with their homes and are continuously living under a burden. But as they come to their workplace, they feel free and they feel that their mind is without fear. They can share their experiences with others. They can get guidance from their colleagues and friends to tackle the situation. And sometimes they can get in contact with doctors, lawyers, or counselors when they are at the workplace. All of this is not possible from home. They can speak freely at work as they get some peace of mind. That is why they are eager to go to their workplace, to be able to breathe freely and speak their mind. They express that workplaces are comfortable and a good support when they are facing violence. This makes workplace and even having a job very important for women. And that is why we need ILO convention, or at least in our national law, so that domestic violence does not remain an issue that women deal with alone inside the four walls of their home, but can also get support from her employer.
In this current situation, when all of us are locked down in our houses, how is this impacting women differently? As a woman leader and as an advocate, what kind of domestic violence incidents are you getting to hear?
Neha ji, today the whole world is fighting with coronavirus and a lot of safety measures are suggested to prevent coronavirus. Just like stay at home is one from that. 100% lockdown is declared in India and everybody is now locked in their houses. In this scenario, if homes are not safe, then what is the solution for it? From last 3 weeks, I am having online discussions on the phone with my Nirbhayas. Nirbhaya means our woman advocates. I am asking them about their present situation. And I got anxious when I heard from them that they are unable to breathe freely at home because of increase in domestic violence in this lockdown period. Most of them are feeling suffocated and they are eagerly waiting for the lockdown to get over. The main problem is that their perpetrators who are harassing these women are getting 24 hours to watch them. They are continuously abusing, threatening, insulting and harassing them. So women are living with that fear in home. Another thing is that globally, domestic work has always been seen as a woman's responsibility. And men feel that this is not their job. So most women are nowadays totally engaged in domestic work, like cooking, washing, cleaning, and fulfilling demands of their family members. Her workload is totally increased in this COVID-19 period. Economic fear is also there. The government of Maharashtra declared to deposit only 75% salary in their bank accounts. So it is again hard to fulfill fundamental needs in this less salary. The fear of losing your job is also in their mind because of the changing economical condition due to COVID-19. And it is not only happening with women, but also with her partners. Men are also worrying about their jobs.
And I think, like you said, not even 10% women, like you were sharing with me before, that not even 10% women are reporting of what's happening, because most of the time women do not see anything beyond physical or sexual abuse as violence, because everything else is so normalized in our society. Thanks for sharing this, Sheila ji. And we know that there are cultural contexts to it, but some of the stigma and underreporting are global issues. And one of the challenges, like you said, especially in today's time, because of constant watch and added challenge of reaching out for help, women are in a more challenging, difficult situation now. And we know that women are 5 times more likely to reach out to someone that they know. which is why the role of a woman advocate is so important. Our last podcast episode focused on women's advocacy, so it's there for anyone listening who would like to know more about the role of a woman's advocate. Sheela ji, you have also built community alliances to address violence against women. What roles these alliances are playing or can play in current situation of pandemic?
Neha ji, in the last few years, we have built Nirbhaya Advocate Community with various NGOs, police, media, legal advisors and counselors. We are always in their contact. And all these committee members are familiar with our work and our issues and our objectives. So they are always ready to help us. This network is built up in all the states. And in each division, my union-trained Nirbhaya advocates are always in contact with the local community alliances. Now our women advocates have established visibility in the whole state of Maharashtra. So nowadays, in the period of COVID-19, all these institutions are supporting in fighting the circumstances very bravely. Neha ji, I would like to share an example of building alliances with committee organizations. One lady who is working as a conductor, who is now come to know that she is, in this period, she is pregnant. Already she has 2 kids and she was not ready for another child. But unfortunately, she is pregnant and her husband was blaming her as if it's only her fault. He was torturing her. That fellow was abusing her and beating her, saying that why she didn't take precaution. She was being harassed and abused daily by her husband in front of her small kids for this pregnancy. She called me for help. I connected her with one of our community organizations that is working on health issues and supporting with safe abortion and counseling for them. She contacted the NGO and she is getting the support now. These networks are so important when we work for making a safe environment for strong support for women. And it also builds their trust in the collective power of women and the union.
Exactly. It's amazing that you have these community alliances in place already.
Yes.
And it's effectively working and supporting in these very critical times.
Yes.
And Sheela ji, you were also telling me about a hotline that you have set up in collaboration with a community organization. Can you talk about that?
Yes, definitely, Neha. Recently, Tata Institute and the police department has launched an online service helpline named as Mala Kahi Sangaiche Ahe. It means, I want to say something. MSTKS has built a tie-up with this institution. I want to explain the meaning of this title. I want to say something. This is like a code word, Neha ji, that I want to share. You know, now when women workers are locked in their homes due to COVID-19, these women workers belong to the middle economic class. They live in small, congested, rented houses with their family members. In such circumstances, if they are facing domestic violence, they are unable to speak on the phone or contact anybody for help, as they are being watched 24 hours by their family members or partners. So they enter the bathroom and talk in low voice to call this helpline. We come to know that they are facing domestic violence when they are able to share their experiences. We have tied up with this institution, not only for COVID-19 period, but also for the future. They are providing legal help, medical help, temporary shelter, counseling and support in these days. They are also giving help through local NGOs and providing information regarding schemes of the government for preventing domestic violence. We have tied up with them and we will be working with this institution in the future also. There's one more thing I want to say. I'm feeling very proud as a woman advocate and as a union leader. We have been successful in building community alliances and we have successfully trained Nirbhayas, that is, women advocates at every level to fight with these circumstances. Due to the support of the community and hard work of the Nirbhayas, we are able to put up with this fight. I want to say that even though we are separated and isolated in our homes, we are not alone. We are mentally united and fighting courageously not only with COVID-19, but also with domestic violence.
Thank you so much. That is definitely a very inspiring message. And I'm sure it will inspire women who can relate with these situations, are living in these situations. to know that we are not alone. We are together. Maybe we need to find different ways of being together now in these times. But definitely we'll emerge stronger from this.
So can you tell us a little bit more about the positive role that workplace has in supporting a survivor of domestic violence?
Sure. So I just like to start by saying that we know through studies all around the world that domestic violence has really significant impacts on both safety and productivity of workplaces. Workers who experience it are at risk, but so are their coworkers and other people like clients who happen to be in the workplace. We know that abuse of men seek out women that they abuse in the workplace through phone calls, text messages, emails, unwanted visits, and stalking. And in worst case scenarios, we've even seen women murdered by their abusive partners in the workplace. On the other side, we have seen unions, employers do a great deal of really important work to start to recognize warning signs that workers are experiencing domestic violence, and then to be able to reach out and offer support to their experience to women who are experiencing domestic violence. So workplaces can create safety plans to help keep workers safe from domestic violence. There are many things that they can do. They can prohibit abusive partners or ex-partners from entering the workplace. They can divert abusive phone calls, texts, or emails so that the survivor doesn't have to deal with them. They can change work locations or work hours so it's harder for an abuser to find the woman. Workplaces can also help women to connect with services. They might give the women time off work to visit those services, or they might allow someone from the services to come into the workplace to actually see the woman. So workplaces can keep women safe while they're at work, and they can connect her to services that will help her be safer when she leaves work. In this context of COVID-19, there's been a sudden collapse of the vital supports that workplaces have been able to offer women experiencing domestic violence. So workplaces have to adapt and come up with new ways of helping to keep their workers safe. One thing that workplaces can do is to continue to reach out and maintain contact with their workers. This is especially important if they know or suspect that somebody is experiencing domestic violence. Some workplaces have established code words to let supervisors or coworkers know that they need help. It can be very simple. It could be something like, "I need to buy flour," but that actually means, "Please call the police. I'm in danger right now." So employers can still communicate with their employees about domestic violence. They can send out messages that say domestic violence increases during a crisis like the pandemic. They can let workers know it's okay to talk to their supervisors about this problem. They can give coworkers information about resources available to them and in their communities.
Can you share more about the personal safety plan and the community support that you're talking about? And we will put a link to the podcast later, a more detailed list of the, a more detailed checklist of the measures that you are speaking about.
Sure. Okay. So personal safety measures are really important in these times. But the thing we have to remember is every woman has to decide what's best and what will work for her. So many women have already been managing their safety for some time, and they will have strategies, and they should continue to use those strategies. These are just a few ideas, and we have to know that what will keep one woman safer could put another woman at more risk. So I can't emphasize enough that a woman needs to decide for herself, is this going to help, or will this actually create more risk? So one thing that women can think about doing is clearing the call display frequently from your phone so that your partner can't see who you've been calling or receiving calls from. Same on your computer. Clear your browser history every time you use the computer. If you have a chance to talk to somebody about tech safety and how to maintain online privacy, that's a really good idea. Or if you can find those resources online and really understand in depth what you can do to keep yourself safe and basically your online activity confidential and private. Physically, if you can find a safe room in your house or make a safe room in your house. And so this would be a room that has a solid door and a lock, or if not a lock, a room that you can move a heavy piece of furniture in front of just to barricade yourself if you have to. It should also have a window that's large enough for you to get out of. Be aware that kitchens can be very unsafe because they have knives, they have heavy pots, they have stove tops, and all those things can be used to hurt you. Bathrooms can also be unsafe because they usually don't have a second exit. So try to stay out of the kitchen and the bathroom during an assault. If it's all possible, carry your phone with you at all times. Have it tucked away so it's hard for the abuser to take it away from you. Have key phone numbers saved on it, and have something pre-programmed, so a quick dial that you can dial for help during an assault. If you fear that your partner is going to be physically violent towards you, don't wear scarves or don't wear jewelry that he could use to choke or strangle you. And even don't put your hair in a ponytail that can be used to grab you. During an assault, make yourself as small as possible. If you can, put yourself in a corner or behind or underneath a large piece of furniture. Try to cover your face, your chest, and the abdominal parts of your body. Know where every single exit in your house is. If you have a car, make sure that there's gas in it. And if possible, back it into your driveway so that you can exit quickly. Keep a set of car keys in a secret place just outside the house so you can grab them quickly if you need to. And if you can, stash some cash outside your house in a place where you can grab it and run quickly if you have to. If you have a neighbor you can trust, ask if they can leave a key to their house someplace safe for you in case you need to get to a safe place quickly. If you have children, make arrangements so your children can go to that neighbor if they have to. Talk to your children in a way that's appropriate for their age so that they can feel safe. Develop a safe or a code word with your kids and use that word when you need them to call police or run to neighbor for help. And then I want to just emphasize how important friends, family members, and coworkers are as informal sources of support. So I know that we have distancing and isolation measures in place, but we can stay in touch through telephone, through text messages, through online platforms, through social media. So it's really important to maintain those connections, and especially if we suspect or know that somebody is experiencing domestic violence. We have the UN Secretary General right now who's encouraging us to set up emergency response services in pharmacies or grocery stores. So these are the maybe the only places that women who are experiencing domestic violence might be able to access. So I encourage each community to figure out what they can do. It's really important that we be able to reach women where they are. The Secretary General has also encouraged us to declare shelters as emergency services. And if we do that, we're more likely to make sure that they have the resources they need to respond to women in crisis.
Thank you, Bob. These are really very useful tips. And I'm sure, like, as an immediate response, this community support and neighborhood support and so say personal safety measures is what people are looking for at this point. And as you mentioned, the message from UN Secretary General and largely our long-term response to COVID cannot be without including the response to domestic violence for building long-term support system, because knowing that in these situations, the existing support system can just shut down in one day. So how do we deal with these situations? And like you were initially sharing that the forced lockdown is not new for women. These situations are created again and again. So that's some really helpful information. Thank you so much for sharing your experiences and ideas with us today. And I'm sure that this will be helpful for women advocates who are there to build support and for women facing violence at home. Thank you for listening. If you like the show, please subscribe and leave us a review. It will help other people to find us. In the show description, you will find more information about the ITF, ITF Women, as well as links to our work on COVID-19. Over the next weeks, we will be publishing more special shows on how the virus is hitting transport workers and how working people and their unions are taking action.